Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests on Blog Talk Radio as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever been stuck in your life? I mean, really, really stuck. Would you like to learn more about how to get unstuck and to turn things around? Have you ever wanted to know how to shift gears and to go forward? Tell me, can you imagine meeting 40 people who will inspire you today and every day for the rest of your life? Do you know what a psychotherapist does? When was the last time you heard about a book called U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife? Or better yet now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that you're looking for? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful and make your own U-turn? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest. She is a success coach extraordinaire. She has provided us with wonderful, informative, and inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice. I'm pleased to announce that our show now has over 1.6 million listeners to date. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. Now, let me tell you about my guest. Originally, she was from Atlanta, where she trained as an opera singer. She moved to New York City in 1985 to pursue a career as a stand-up comedian. She worked all over the country and abroad, and then moved to L.A. in 1994 when she heard that Hollywood needed more blondes. My guest experienced an epiphany when she began volunteer work for Children of the Night, a shelter for sexually abused children in Los Angeles. This work not only waked up the healer in her, but also allowed her to begin healing her own adolescent sexual abuse at the hand of a clergyman. It prompted her to pursue a doctorate in psychology and to specialize in the prevention and healing of child sexual abuse. She now treats victims as well as abusers, for it is her belief that the best way to help victims is to help the perpetrators. She is a pre-licensed psychologist and clinical therapeutic hypnotist in Los Angeles. She leads group therapy sessions for sex offenders at Pacific Professional Associates and is also a busy public speaker. She has been quoted extensively in Cosmopolitan, Red Book, Woman's World, and others. And she is a frequent media expert on numerous radio and TV shows, including CNBC, CNN, Fox, and Anderson. It is my great pleasure to welcome back to our show Dr. Nancy Irwin. Hello, Dr. Nancy. How are you today?
I'm excellent, January. A pleasure to be back on here. And congratulations on your recent accolades for being one of the most viewed shows or most listened to shows. That's fabulous.
Oh, thank you so much. And it's because I have wonderful guests like you. You've been on the show before, and I love talking to you. I love what you have gone through. Let's talk a little bit about your own personal success story, what it has taken you to find your success. Could you share with us how you started out?
Well, you covered it in most of the bio. But, I have made several U-turns in my life, and just so viewers know, or listeners know, it's a visual. The name of the book is U-turn. That's Y-O-U-turn, changing
right.
direction in life, because you are the one that turns your life around. We can't always help what happened to us. Many of us were victims of circumstances. Yeah, but we always can be responsible for our response to whatever happened to us moving forward. It took me a long time to learn that because I was stuck in a victim mode for quite some time and miserable, and I just couldn't go on living in hatred and shame and anger and bitterness. And I think that's what I'm more proud of than anything else.
Now, how old were you when you suffered the sexual abuse from a clergyman?
14 to 18.
Wow.
It went on, for several years.
Did you block it out completely, or was it always subliminally traveling with you?
I blocked it out a good bit, and let me hasten to say it. I'm in my 50s now, so 100 years ago when I was 14,
yeah.
It was a lot different than 14 now. Kids are much more mature now. I looked like a 12-year-old boy when I was 14, and that was part of the confusion, and I felt ushered into adulthood, and I felt special, and I felt beautiful at an age that is extremely awkward for a lot of kids, especially girls.
Mm-hmm.
So in one way, it was very enticing, and I enjoyed it, quote unquote. In another way, I knew it was wrong, and it was shameful. So that great dichotomy, that huge conflict is what gets a lot of people. They get seduced into it, if you will. And there are some benefits from it. You do, in a sense, get your self-esteem. You're learning about sexuality, which is natural to learn. Yet you're getting all these mixed messages and very harmful ones about crossing boundaries. And so it's very confusing. So I kind of buried it. I certainly couldn't talk to anyone about it.
Right.
Because where I was raised in the South, we just didn't talk about those. You never mentioned sex until you were married and had babies, and even then, you didn't talk about it. Plus, he was a friend of the family.
Oh,
so that
yeah.
went on for years, and I was probably in my early 30s before I started really, well into my 30s before I really started getting acquainted with this.
Uh-huh.
And here's the deal. This is what I'd really like listeners to know about this particular issue, is many times we don't see the harm while it's going on in those young years, especially if they're teens and their bodies are developing. We see it more in children, but in teens, we don't see it so much because they are, quote-unquote, enjoying it. The real damage comes out later on as you begin having relationship patterns and a lot of inappropriate relationships. It's like smoking. You really don't see the danger until later. You may enjoy it in the short term, but the harmful effects show up later.
Okay. Now, and you were in your 30s when you were finally able to confront this. What triggered your confrontation?
Well, beginning to see dead ends of relationships, and actually it was in a very dramatic way. I was in... not in the play, but I was in the theater on Broadway. There was a very popular play with John Malkovich, and it was called Burn This. And I'll spare you all the details of the play, but cut to the chase, there's a letter exchanged, and in the letter, he's telling her, burn this. Don't let anybody else read this. Well, that went through me like a knife. All of a sudden, the memory started flooding up, because this guy, for years, intermittently, when I didn't see him, he'd be writing me letters. And he would always, tell me sexual fantasies and things he wanted to do, talk about things we'd done. And he would inevitably end it with, P.S., burn this. No one else would understand what we have. So when I heard that, burn this, it went through me. I ran out to the street, vomited all over Broadway. and got into therapy and started uncovering a lot of this stuff.
Oh, my gosh. That is such a powerful story, and that one such thing would trigger it. Let's talk a little bit. You trained to be an opera singer, and then you moved to New York to pursue a career as a stand-up comedian. That's quite a jump from opera singer to comedian. How did that come about?
That came about, I've got a master's degree, a bachelor and master's degree in opera performance, and I'm a good singer, but I wasn't great. I wasn't good enough for big time opera. I wasn't good enough for the Met, and I didn't really want to teach. And it just hit me there were other things that I liked about being on stage besides just singing opera. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I had a flair for comedy. I was always cast in the comedic roles as a singer. And I started doing plays and writing my own material. And a lot of people started telling me, you know what, you should try stand-up. You'd be great. And I thought, you know what, that sounds like it might fit me. So out of the dare one night, I went out and did it. And fortunately or unfortunately, it went very well the first few times. And I got hooked. I always think it's a shame I didn't bomb the first time. I would have cut to the chase. But no, I did that for 10 years. And
oh, my gosh. 10 years as a stand-up comedian. Uh-huh. That just makes me want to faint. I'm in awe of anyone who can go out and do that. It is such a difficult thing to do, isn't it?
Well, there are times. Most of it was very, very fun. I had a lot of extraordinary experiences. And when I moved here to L.A., because it's the law, you have to move here as an entertainer. I got to open for people like Jerry Seinfeld and Ray Romano and all of these great guys. I mean, the Wayans brothers, all these people. So it was wonderful. And I got to open for a lot of country singers in Nashville. I did a couple of USO tours. So I had a lot of great times. There are a lot of hell gigs, of course, too. You have that.
Well,
stalkers and everything, the whole thing.
Usually we think of female stand-up comedians. We go back and we think of people like Phyllis Diller, Martha Ray, all the people like that. And you are so gorgeous. You must have really been quite exceptional. When you walked out on stage, people must have been in shock that you were a stand-up comedian.
Well, aren't you kind to say that? And I always loved the surprise element because I look more like a singer. And actually, that kind of fooled people. And I did a lot of singing in my act as well. But I did a lot of jokes about that, how I certainly don't look like your typical comic. But, Phyllis Diller, what an inspiration. I got to meet her a few years ago. You know, she just died, I guess, a year ago. I did get to meet her a few years ago. And I got to quote one of the very first jokes I ever heard her do when I was a child. And she remembered it and laughed. It was hilarious. She said, when I was growing up, people always told me I couldn't hold a candle to my sister. So one day I did.
That's fantastic. I love it. I love it.
Love it.
You know, right now, Dr. Nancy Irwin, we're going to take a break and hear about your host. And when we come back, we're going to talk about your book, U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife with Dr. Nancy Irwin. We'll be right back.
Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shalt Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Whine at Amazon.com.
Welcome back with my wonderful guest, Dr. Nancy Irwin, the author of U-Turn, Changing Directions in Midlife. Now, Dr. Nancy, after you were a stand-up comedian, you became a psychologist and a clinical therapeutic hypnotist. How long did that take for you to do that transition?
5 years. Yeah, and that came about, I was still working as a comic, and you know, when you're a comic, you only work about 30 minutes a day, so I was bored, had a lot of time on my hands, really, and so I started volunteering in the community, and I chose a shelter for sexually abused kids.
Mm-hmm.
You wonder why. Anyway, that really helped my healing, and it waked up the healer in me, and I was able to see, you know, myself and these kids, because I was the same age when I was abused, as because I was working with. So it was amazing. I thought, you know what? If they can move through this, so can I. There's something I can do to help them. So that prompted me. Over the course of a few weeks or months, I do the clubs at night, the kids by day, and I said the scales started tipping, and I just thought, you know what? I'm meant to do something else. It's time for a change. Mm-hmm. So I went back to school, and 5 years later, voila.
Now, when did you write your first book, U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife?
It came out in 08, and I want to say it took me a couple of years to cull all the stories and whittle them down to the most dramatic, the most diverse one. Not dramatic. Some of them are very simple, but they're powerful. So just to get a diversity of stories and ages and genders and people and all of that, which was a terribly fun process. And it came about because when I completed my doctorate, I was, 48? Yeah, when I started my practice. And all around me, people going, oh, my God, I can't believe you're starting a business and starting over at this age. And I'm like, well, you know, a lot of people do it. And they're like, oh, well, how old are you going to be? And I'm like, same age I'll be if I don't.
Exactly.
So I started from looking for other stories of people all around me who were doing it as well. And some had many more obstacles to overcome than I did. At least I was single and didn't have any kids. A lot of people, wow, with kids and braces and college tuitions and stuff, and they still started over. So I created this book and got all these stories to prove, you know, it's never too late to live a life you love. And if we can do it, so can you.
Oh, that is such wonderful advice. Now, yep. Let's talk a little bit about what is a U-turn, and it's spelled Y-O-U-turn. Could you share with us what that is?
Well, I think most of us know what a U-turn is on the road. We change our minds, we're lost, we are going in the wrong direction, and we pull a U-turn. Well, who says we can't do the same thing in life? It's pretty foolish to keep going down the same road if it's not getting you where you want to go. So you can make a detour, you can make a U-turn and start over and transfer your skills and go into another direction in your life. Many people have many stories that I got were all, they're divided into two parts. Some are changed by default, meaning life did it to them. Either they were divorced or dumped or stricken with an illness or an injury, or they were fired or laid off. Or others were like mine. They were just bored. They knew something was missing. They wanted something more. And those were changes of choice. So I tried to get a mixture of both and show that either way, you can still make the change.
Well, your book is fantastic, and you have over 40 stories from people over 40. I'm in awe of what you have done with this book. You know, my new book is coming out next month, and I have only shared 10 people who I call priceless personalities. So for you to do the research for 40, I'm very impressed. Could you give us four tips for blasting through the blind spots when you are attempting to make a U-turn?
Sure. Now, everybody's going to have different blind spots. Everybody's going to have most people do have some fear. And the way I combat that is, you know, if you wait till you aren't afraid, you're probably going to be dead. Because most human beings are scared all the time. I can tell you as a stand-up comic, people are up there scared to death. They just know how to cover it up and make it look cool. So you can act as if until the confidence really kicks in. So I say that change does not require a lack of fear. It requires courage. And the very definition of courage is to move through the fear when there's a cause bigger than you. War heroes are scared all the time. Firemen are scared, but they keep doing the right thing anyway. That's what courage is. It comes from French, meaning heart. after you follow your heart, the fear will begin to dissipate or go away.
Oh, that's such good advice.
Yeah, and you also want to realize sometimes it gets to be much more scary staying where you are than if you take a chance and move through the fear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's important to go forward. What is the second blind spot?
Another blind spot is realize that most skills are transferable. Even if you feel like it's too late to start, I mean, who would think that comedy turning into a shrink? Well, there's a lot of transferable skills, and I always joke and say, please, the road from comedy to mental health is very short indeed.
I get
a lot
it.
Of transferable,
I love it.
That my years in comedy absolutely served me. First of all, I'm here in Hollywood, so I treat a lot of creative artists. I speak their language because I've been on stage and behind the camera and in front of the camera, as have they. My quick sense of humor serves me, and I use that when it's appropriate, of course. And also, I do a lot of media appearances. So, you know, I do public speaking, I'm on radio and TV. All of that is because, you know, the confidence I learned and the skills of being on stage. So there is some transferable skill in everything we do, no matter what it is. So know that. Start making a list of all the things. I always advise people, if they don't even know where they want to go yet, start making a list of all the things you've done, all the things that you like. And they may intersect. They may not. You may have done a lot of things you hate, and then there's a whole other list of things you like that you haven't had a chance to do yet. Then also make a list of all the things that people come to you for. We're all sought out for different reasons. What sort of advice, help do they come to you for? That's a clue about who and what you are. And then also make a list of what are your values? What gives you the most meaning in life? And then just let those lists baste for a few weeks, a few months, and then start connecting the dots. Start looking around and just being open, asking questions of the universe, of God, of your own inner voice, of people who know you. And just say, what do you think my purpose is? You can even ask God. I'm open to a new direction. How can I best be of service in this world? Without being angry or depressed or feeling like your life is over, that energy is not going to go anywhere. You're going to be very up and curious and fascinated, and then keep allowing those lists to just sort of, like I said, marinate, and you might be shocked and amazed what begins coming down the pike. You feel like it comes out of left field, but actually you open the door to invite that in.
Oh, this is such powerful advice. To step back, take your time, as you said, let it baste, find your purpose, and eventually, once you acknowledge your purpose in life, it would be my thought that it would be quite easy from there to find your passion. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Absolutely. And another great thing that I always recommend is do what I did. Get out in the community and volunteer.
Oh,
it's through selfless giving that, ironically, we're able to see who we are. When we're not wearing any masks of daughter, wife, professional, girl, any of those things, it's pure soul energy, person to person. You're able to untap facets of yourself you may not have even realized before.
Oh, that is such good advice. And a life lived with passion is so, so wonderful. It's actually everyone's goal should be to do that.
Yes.
And it's so difficult for some people to find their passion in life. And your steps to finding it is acknowledging your blind spots and going forward. This is great advice. Very powerful stuff, Dr. Nancy.
Yes.
We're gonna take a break now and have a commercial. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the mind, the owner's manual, and then I would like to talk about detours that we encounter on our road to success. Also, when we come back, we'll be sharing your website information and telling everyone how they can get your book. We'll be right back with Dr. Nancy Irwin.
Could your commute or daily exercise routine use a boost? When was the last time you really got the giggles? June is audiobook month, and the producers of Yikes, Another Quirky Audiobook, invite you to tune in, turn on, and let loose a few good laughs. Yikes, another quickie audiobook, is about a marijuana enthusiast named Blue McKenna who gets involved in a reality TV show as a way to cure an apocalyptic case of writer's block. A conglomerate of kooky contestants invades the polygamous community of Naval, Utah to compete in a reality show called Yikes. Things get sticky when Blue McKenna's hemp garden is ignited during an ill-fated seance. Find out what's going down in the desert in Yikes, another quirky audiobook. This is Adele Park inviting you to celebrate Audiobook Month on the funny side. Visit www.yikesaudiobook.com. That's www.yikesaudiobook.com.
Welcome back with my guest, Dr. Nancy Irwin. And Dr. Nancy, let's talk about the mind, the owner's manual, the model of the mind that you share with everyone in your book.
Yes, indeed. Well, it is a visual, but I'll see if people can just imagine a big circle, blank. That's what your mind looks like at birth. The old tabula rasa theory, meaning you come in and you're a blank slate. Regardless if you believe in past life information, in this life with what you've learned here and now, suffice to say, let's just say it's a blank slate. At the bottom of it, we're all born with this fight-flight mechanism. And inherent in that, we're born with two innate fears for our protection. That's the fear of loud noises and the fear of falling. Evolutionarily, we've had these for a million years, ever since we've been around, and always will be because they keep us alive. That being said, all the other fears are learned, including the fear of a new job, the fear of asking a girl out on a date, the fear of skydiving, that we go into fear of falling, but the fear of public speaking. All of these things were learned, and fortunately, whatever we've learned can be unlearned. The fear of aging was also learned. Society has told us, you know, it's scary. Says who? That being said, we sort of trigger that powerful fight-flight state because when you're in fight-flight, you're hyper-anxious, you're hyper-alert, and you're hyper-suggestible, which is exactly meaning you are open to new suggestions. So when you meditate, when you do hypnosis, you're in a state of this and you're able to receive new messages and focus on what you do want to create as opposed to keeping what you don't want. Then as soon as you're born, you start filling up the subconscious mind, and that's comprised of billions of bits of information that we learn, the good stuff, the bad stuff we love, stuff we hate, stuff we're good at, stuff that we like, stuff that sucks, what to avoid, all of that. So, of course, we're going to gravitate toward pleasure and try to avoid pain. Yet all of those pluses and minuses, the positive, the negative associations, the stuff we learned, while it's all individual, all of those bits of information, far and away, most of them are beliefs. They are not facts.
Okay.
So as we all know, there's a lot of unlucky kids in the world who grow up hearing horrible things, like you're stupid, you're ugly, you're this color, that race. Well, sadly, kids believe everything, even if it's not the truth, of course. They believe everything. Santa Claus, Tooth Fairy. And sadly, all that stuff, if they hear something like you're going to grow up and be a loser like your father, that sadly can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Conversely, lucky kids who pretty much hear you're beautiful, you're smart, do whatever you want, the sky's the limit, work hard, that too can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And again, the cool thing is none of those bits of information are facts. They're beliefs. And we can always change our beliefs. We can't change facts like gravity or our height, our age, things like that. But we can always change our beliefs. If you believe you're stupid or too ugly or this color or that race and inferior, that can always be changed. And that's the work that we do in all therapy. We shift the belief to a more empowering one. You know, just because you've been working at a job you don't like for X number of years doesn't mean you're stuck there. You can shift into another belief set that says, you know what, I haven't been fulfilled here, but going forward, I can be. Who can help me find what would really light me up like a Christmas tree? what do I need to do? What training do I need? What do I need to put in place in my life to really feel powerful, to have some meaning and some joy going forward? And the same thing with a relationship or a health issue or your sexuality or your spirituality. Every arena of our life can be changed at any mm-hmm. time. And it comes by, it starts, all behavior comes from the subconscious, and that's driven by our beliefs, which can always be changed.
Well, that is such fantastic, powerful advice. Let's talk a little bit, Dr. Nancy Irwin, about the detours that people encounter on when they're in the middle of making their U-turn, when they're trying to change direction. What are some of the detours that we have to deal with?
Well, there will be obstacles in the road. There will be challenges. There will potentially be mates or family members or coworkers or bosses who say, you can't do this. It's taking up too much time. You're being selfish. I don't like this. I married an attorney. I didn't marry an artist. When you're trying to change from the former to the latter, there may be some flack from other people. And what I always tell people is you want to listen to them. They're entitled to their feelings. And you have made a change, and that does take some accommodation by others. But you want to let them know that you are quite sure that they want what's best for you, that you mm-hmm. know they want your happiness. And usually that pulls people around to a place where they want to be supportive of you. If not, then you may want to look at if that relationship is really serving you. If mm-hmm. someone only loves you because you're an attorney and not because they want you to be, you know, the best you can be, then you might need to review that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about people who are trying to make changes when they're going through divorce or if they have a very serious disease or serious addiction? What advice do you have for those kind of people?
Well, the people going through a divorce, of course, you want to focus on, I'm a big believer, no matter what's going on, we always have a choice. You can find something good about your current situation. Sometimes it seems really, really hard. What's good about this situation? Many times if it's a health issue, it's how you can take care of your health better, how you could be more responsible, go to the doctor more, change this, change that, begin to take care of your health more. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes it's genetic, and it's nothing you caused, of course, but mm-hmm. there's always a lesson to be learned in there. Perhaps it's just to value your life more. Most of us take our health for granted until it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to ask yourself, no matter what's happening, what is good about the situation? Because you can always find something. Einstein even said, in every adversity, there is opportunity. Sometimes it seems really hard to find, but you got to dig, and there's always something in there.
Now, is your book basically for baby boomers at this time?
Well, I am one, and I wrote it because at the time I wrote it, which was 08, the baby boomers were starting to go through, midlife crises and changing, making a lot of changes. But I like to say that it's certainly suitable for 20s and 30-somethings so that they can possibly avert what we used to call a midlife crisis. They can see that I don't have to be forced to choose something right now through the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I will be able to make a U-turn, but for now, this feels good, knowing maybe in 20 years I might want to revisit and make a U-turn.
Right. You always have that option. You know, Dr. Nancy, could you share your website information and tell my listeners how they can get your books?
Of course. The website is drnancyirwin.com. That's just drnancyirwin.com. And the book, U-Turn, Changing Direction in Midlife, can be purchased on my website or Amazon.com. You may have heard of that.
Also, let's mention that you have another book called Roadmap to Success that you wrote with Kenneth Blanchard, and that is also available at your website and at Amazon.com, too.
Yes, and also Deepak Chopra. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of him or not. A little known guy. Yeah, I'm featured in only one chapter. It's like a collaborative book. Deepak's name is on it, and Dr. Kenneth Blanchard, and little Dr. Nancy Irwin. But yes, that's a wonderful book with a lot of different contributors sharing their tips for the roadmap to success. And that can be purchased through me. They can call me or go on my website. And actually, yeah, I think that's available on Amazon as well. And these are both available in Kindle.
Wonderful, wonderful. You know, we're going to take a break and hear a commercial. When we come back, we're going to talk about what success means to you, if you have any regrets and advice. And also, I'd like to talk about some of the stories, the 40 stories from people over 40 that you have shared so wonderfully in your book. We'll be right back with Dr. Nancy Irwin.
Second time around can be better. Second timers try harder. Looking to have a rewarding second marriage, any marriage, read Successful Second Marriages by Patricia Bubash. She interviews a variety of couples that have succeeded in their second attempt. Each story reflects that the second marriages can be tough going, yet be the best of the best. Learn from these couples who share their intimate stories, how they struggled with difficulty and have thrived. Stories such as, "Our kids drove us apart. We separated 5 times in 4 years. 4 months into our marriage, my 85-year-old father-in-law came to live with us. 1 year into our marriage, I was diagnosed legally blind. Death of my eldest child brought grief, depression into our new marriage." Successful Second Marriages is encouraging, hopeful, inspiring. Available on Amazon.com in book form and ebook. Read Pat's musings at www.successfulsecondmarriages.com.
I highly recommend Successful Second Marriages. I'm in my second marriage myself, and we're going to be celebrating our 43rd anniversary this year. So Pat's book is out there. It's a wonderful book to read. Now, Dr. Nancy, let's talk about some of the people that you interviewed and shared in your book, 40 Stories from People Over 40. Chapter 1 is called A Rising Star, and this is a chapter about a mother of 9 who created a foundation for lepers in India after her daughter died of suicide. Tell us a little bit about this story.
Can you believe that? Yes, this is a suburban housewife, a mother of 9, had just the world by a string. And sadly, her daughter, who did have a mental disorder, so it wasn't completely unexpected, but of course it was tragic, committed suicide in college. And they went, she and her husband, the mother, Becky Douglas, went to clean out the child's room. And in going through some of her personal effects, they saw that she had been sending money to an orphanage in India. And it was fine. Money was no issue. But Becky was just kind of flummoxed, and something just prompted her to fly there and check it out. Mm-hmm. And she did, and she saw it was a home for the children of the leprosy affected. We're actually not supposed to say lepers. It's like almost a racial epithet now. We're not supposed to use that word. The leprosy affected is the PC term. So anyway, cut to the chase. She ended up starting a foundation to help the children of the leprosy affected because, I mean, like you, I had no idea leprosy was still around.
Right.
I thought it went out with the Bible. I had no idea that's still a prominent disease over there, but it is. And the parents will lose their limbs and their eyesight, making it very hard to parent. So the children, some of them very young, were left, you know, to fend for themselves and beg in the streets. So she started a school to educate the kids and also to do job training for the leprosy affected so they can do something in their current condition. So it's just grown by leaps and bounds. It's an amazing organization. And talk about giving meaning to a child's life and death. That's, I thought, the most powerful story. That's why I made it the first.
Oh, yes. That is just an amazing story. Chapter 2 is an interesting story. It's about a monk who was kicked out of a monastery. Now, how does one get kicked out of a monastery?
Very gently. Greg Moores is an amazing man. He is brilliant, and he had studied so much philosophy and Eastern religions, and he was a monk for 9 years. He didn't do anything inappropriate to get kicked out. They did it in a very loving way. They just said, with his big personality, they just said, you know what, you are meant to do something else. I think the quote was, a dog can't try to be a bird, or something like that. And so they kicked him out, and he was completely stunned, and he sat there at the end of the driveway looking at the gates to the monastery that he was, you know, locked out of for several hours and cried, and he just thought, you know what, I need to go to Asia. So he did, and he started studying all the philosophies he'd already studied firsthand, cut to the chase. He's written several books, and now he's a fabulous life coach.
Oh, that's amazing. Chapter 3 is A Daughter's Promise, and it's about a young woman who takes over her father's business reluctantly, but then does quite well with it, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. Now, the PS to that story is she has sold it. She's older now, and so it was a knitting factory. And she was able to save it and help all of these older employees. That's the only job they'd ever have had. So she saved that. Now it has been sold, so it's all a happy ending. But, yeah, it was amazing.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. I love ones with happy endings. Chapter 4 is Sometimes Ask God for a Sign. And God is out there. He does give signs, doesn't he?
Absolutely. This was Shelley Campbell. She is a crackerjack, and she was a bookkeeper. She had a successful bookkeeping practice for many years, and she had one major client, then a whole bunch of minor clients. And unfortunately, one day out of the blue, the major client switched to another bookkeeper. Well, the bottom sort of fell out of her business. Of course, she scrambled to save it. It was just impossible. It was really difficult. So sadly, she ended up filing bankruptcy. How embarrassing for somebody who's had a big bookkeeping company. But anyway, it was the best thing that happened. Now she is a fabulous teacher and seminar leader and author. Her seminar is called, she's a financial stress reduction specialist.
Okay.
You take her course, you learn how to manage money, and she knows it all, having filed bankruptcy and come back to solvency.
Okay. Chapter 5 is You Gotta Stay Strong, and this is an interesting story about an ex-con who was a cocaine addict, and then he turns his life around and becomes quite successful, doesn't he?
That's actually a she.
Oh, it's a she. Wow.
It's a she. She is one dynamic lady. I met her at the parole office. We were both there as professionals. Yep. When they let the guys out and you meet at the detention center at probation where they're going back out into society, all sorts of vendors and merchants and therapists and people are there to, you know, reorient them into society. And that's where I met her. And she spoke so powerfully. It just, I was like, I have to meet this woman. Who is she? And we switched car, and it turns out she had been in jail. She had been a cocaine addict and in sales distribution. Unbelievable. And now she's a successful, when she got out, she was determined to go straight and never have to go back in. So she worked as a telemarketer and saved her money and, believe it or not, was able to buy a house in Los Angeles within 3 years. I think she said she ate McDonald's every day. You could eat like a Happy Meal at that time, even as an adult. She spent like 99 cents a day, saved all her money, and bought a house, and then bought another one, started flipping them, and the rest is history. And now a couple of those she has set up as halfway houses for women who are reorienting in society who've come out of prison.
Oh, that is fantastic. What a wonderful, wonderful story to share.
Oh, I know. I love her. She's amazing. Smart as a whip.
I want everyone listening to be sure to get this book because we've only talked about 5 chapters. Well, there's many, many more chapters that will inspire and inform you. Dr. Nancy, briefly, could you tell us what success means to you? Do you have any regrets? And what advice do you have for my listeners?
Well, my definition of success, I throw out one of my favorite quotes, and it was said by Booker T. Washington, the great educator. And he said, I'm probably paraphrasing, but essentially, I have learned to judge a man not by the success he has in life, but rather by the obstacles he has overcome while trying to achieve.
It says it all. That says it all. That is such an amazing comment. What about regrets? Do you have any regrets yourself?
Minor ones. Nothing huge. We all, anybody says they have no regrets is lying. So we all have some. Now that I'm too old to have kids, I'm starting to think, I should have had kids. But unfortunately, now that I pretty much have my act together and would be a wonderful parent, the eggs are too old. Back in the childbearing years, I would have been a train wreck as a mother. So that's a minor regret simply because I feel that there's a lot of ways to give to children besides just having your own. And I certainly love working with kids, especially teenagers. And some of my favorite heroines were also childless. Mm-hmm. Oprah, Mother Teresa, Gloria Steinem. There's a lot of powerful women who never had kids, yet really, really shaped millions and millions of young women.
Well, I've had 4 children, and when people ask me that question, I say what I would do if my next lifetime would be skip the children, and I would go straight to the grandchildren.
There you go. That's what I keep saying. I need to marry a man who's already got who has 2 grown children, so I could be a grandmother and back.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I love being an aunt. Yeah.
That's the easiest way to do it. Well, Dr. Nancy Irwin, as always, it's been wonderful having you on the show. I look forward to having you back again. So there are so many more chapters in your fabulous book that we can talk about and share with my listeners. Do plan on coming back soon.
Anytime, January. You're a great host, and I just want all the listeners to live a life that they love.
Absolutely. To my wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show today. My upcoming guests for the rest of the week are all exciting, eclectic, energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and astonish you, just like Dr. Nancy Irwin. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful too. I would love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. We love sharing our stories, struggles, and secrets for success. It's our hope that we can encourage all of our listeners to emulate our guests today and every day. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, please stop whining, start smiling, and start sharing our success show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest today, Dr. Nancy Irwin. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.